Okay, good morning, everybody. It's just turned 9 a.m., so we'll make a start. Thank you for coming to this first session of the day. My name's Sam Hassani, and today we'll be talking about apps for IT professionals. This session is really targeted at IT pros. We'll be looking at how you can configure your SharePoint 2013 on-premises farm to support apps. And once you've actually built that capability out, as IT pros, arm you with what you need to know around carrying out operations against apps throughout the typical life cycle. Just a quick intro. My name's Sam Hassani. I'm a SharePoint consultant working at Brightstar in the U.K. My primary goal is to work with customers to build out SharePoint environments. My kind of area of focus really is around operations, infrastructure, scale-out and availability, and so on. Prior to joining Brightstar, I worked at Microsoft for approximately 7 years as a Premier Field Engineer, also out of the U.K., focusing on SharePoint. All my contact details are up on the slide here, so if you do have any questions for me about this session or related topics during or after the conference, feel free to get in touch with me, and I'll do what I can to try and help you. So as I say, we'll be really spending a fair amount of time today configuring your on-premises farm for apps. But before we do look at that, we're kind of going to go through a bit of an overview as to how apps hang together in SharePoint. And the reason we do that is because the underlying apps architecture really does determine a lot of the infrastructure requirements that we have. So some of the requirements that we have are fairly demanding on other parts of our IT organization, be it networking, DNS, and AD, and infrastructure management teams. They're all going to be impacted by the kind of changes that we're going to request when we want to deploy apps to our SharePoint 2013 farms. As we kind of go through this process, I'll also make sure that we call out pieces that are relevant to those of you that are running SharePoint Online. And the final section of this session, once we look at the app lifecycle management piece, will be relevant to both SharePoint Online and SharePoint on-premises farms. So to get started then, I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time giving you a history lesson right now, but I kind of wanted to just give you a bit of background as to where we are with the development story today in SharePoint and kind of how we got here and why this is important. So those of you that are running SharePoint farms are probably fairly used to running with full trust solutions in your farms and actually deploying those solutions. How many of you run with those sorts of customizations today? Okay, great. So these have been around for a very long time, not only around with SharePoint, but other .NET-based applications and so on. And when you consider hosted platforms, these aren't necessarily the most feasible and easiest to maintain. Some of you may be aware of the stabilization issues that we've had with full trust solutions and the unpredictability that they introduce when managing a platform. So in SharePoint 2010, we had sandbox solutions, and the idea with sandbox solutions was to try and contain code that was running and not impact other services running within our SharePoint 2013 farm. However, these weren't great. We suffered with scalability issues. They were difficult for kind of end users to get to grips with around deploying and taking advantage of the capability and features that those solutions provided. So come SharePoint 2013, we introduced the cloud app model. And the cloud app model really kind of has the hosted platform at the heart of it. So what we mean by that is we have a full life cycle story with apps, and deploying an app allows for off-box execution and really allows us to protect the IT, the platform that we're running and that we're providing the app functionality to. On top of that, Microsoft kind of believes and has designed apps in a way that we don't overload the end user with bombardment of customization concepts that they need to be familiar with to take advantage of that functionality. We're kind of working on the assumption with apps that end users understand that we have SharePoint sites. These sites have pages, and they can have apps on these pages to enhance the experience that they have and take advantage of additional functionality. So in SharePoint 2013 and SharePoint Online today, it's as if everything is an app to the end user. the IT pro, the developer, and power users, we still know that this isn't actually the case. You know, a document library today hasn't been rewritten and rebuilt as an app. It is still just a list definition activated as a feature. But to the end user, it's as if everything is an app. So in terms of how we can actually provide apps to our organization through SharePoint, well, there's a couple of different options. First of all, you can develop and build apps in-house, upload those to what we call the app catalog, and users that have access to that app catalog can go and install the app and take advantage of that app within their own SharePoint sites. In addition to that, we have the SharePoint store, and this allows users to potentially access the store, find an app that they think is of interest to them. Some apps are free, some are licensed. They can either download these apps or purchase and then download the apps and take advantage of that functionality. It may be that you don't want to provide access to your users to access the SharePoint store, in which case your users can be prevented from downloading the apps, but they still would have the ability to visit the store and request that you, as an administrator, download that app and provide them the capability to then install it within their sites should you see fit. Once you've made apps available to your users through an app catalog, your users will then see those apps that you've downloaded or built when they go to the site contents page within their site. So this is exactly that, and you can see towards the bottom of that shot, we've got apps you can add. And in this particular example, there's actually only one app there that we have downloaded from the store, and that's the Yammer app for SharePoint, but there's no kind of real distinguishment as to whether or not that app was built in-house or whether or not it's an out-of-the-box capability of SharePoint, such as a task list, from the end user's perspective. So apps for SharePoint can be divided into a few different categories depending on how they're hosted, and it's important to understand these different categories of apps, as each of these apps or categories of apps have different requirements when it comes to building your on-premises farm to support the deployment of these apps. So we have what we call cloud-hosted apps, which gives us the option between provider-hosted and auto-hosted apps, and then we have what we call SharePoint-hosted apps. So SharePoint-hosted apps are apps whereby all of the components are based in SharePoint and all of the logic actually runs on the client side. So SharePoint-hosted apps can't contain any server-side code. And all of the components, so be it content types or list definitions that provision lists, will actually sit in what we call an app web. So this app web is a sub-site that is provisioned when you install the app in a SharePoint site. And everything is contained within that app web. So if you remember, one of the things we just mentioned about apps was one of the key design goals for apps in SharePoint 2013 was to provide a single lifecycle story and make sure that apps were self-contained within themselves. So when you do remove an app in the future, it's very easy to actually do that, take away the app web where all of the artifacts are stored and no kind of feature references and that kind of thing that we may have seen with full trust solutions are left behind. So the app web, as I say, is a separate subsite. It's based on a new kind of template in SharePoint 2013. And the host web, which is where we actually installed the SharePoint app from, has a link to this app web. So nothing really is deployed to the host web itself, other than a few UI components, such as the link that you saw in the site contents page to actually access that app, and a few other pieces too for certain other scenarios, which we'll touch on in a minute. In addition to, sorry, I'll hold questions to the end if that's okay. In addition to the SharePoint hosted apps, we have the cloud hosted apps, the provider hosted, and auto hosted. And the provider hosted apps allow us to host our components as part of the app and all the logic outside of SharePoint on an external platform. So the provider hosted apps really provide the most flexibility because we can use any platform, any programming language within that app. We can then call back into that app through SharePoint using client-side libraries. Auto-hosted app, also known as Azure Auto-hosted apps, are similar to provider-hosted apps. They're actually only available in SharePoint Online, And the real difference there is auto-hosted apps always contain an Azure website to host the logic and components that you may have, and then a SQL Azure database for data storage as an option. And as I say, those are really provisioned automatically and kind of in an invisible way to the end user, and consequently only available to Office 365 SharePoint sites. So a little bit more about host webs and app webs. You imagine you have a host web, so it's just the SharePoint site as to where you're installing an app. You may have a number of apps that you want to install to that site. An app that's potentially a provider-hosted app or an Azure Auto-hosted app will have an external backing site or platform that it leverages. A SharePoint-hosted app will have an app web, and obviously there's a reference from the app web back to the host web. You may have another SharePoint-hosted app, which again contains different capability, but also has its own unique app web. If on another SharePoint site, you install one of the same apps, so in this case, App 2, you have another app web provisioned. So the mapping between an app and an app web is a one-to-one basis. So every time you install an app web will be provisioned for that specific app. So the actual experience for a user, when they have installed an app and they attempt to interact with that app, they click on the app from the site contents page. Usually, they'll be able to access the app web, and they'll be presented with this full-screen immersive experience. So here we have a simple app. It just allows users to create polls and view the results for those polls. When they access the app, they can go ahead, create new polls, view the results, and so on. However, in some cases, this experience obviously doesn't really work if you think about how we want to integrate different capability from SharePoint within a single entry point. So as well as being able to access the app through the app itself directly into the app web, we have the ability to actually use other UI components to do that. So we have something called app parts, and app parts allow us to read in to an app web and send through certain parameters to retrieve particular information back. So if you think of the poll example that we just looked at there, we can actually have an app part that takes a poll ID as a parameter, and using that poll ID, we bring back results from one of the particular polls that was created within the app. So those are app parts. And the third type of UI component that we can take advantage of in apps are additions to the edit control block when you are within the context of a list item. So in this case, we have a picture library, and we're within the context of a particular picture. As well as the edit control block, which you can't actually see here, we can actually add items to the ribbon. So if you squint, you can hopefully see that. But what we have in the ribbon there is an option to convert to grayscale. And what this particular app will do is by clicking that convert to grayscale button, it will actually redirect us into the app and present us with a grayscale version of that same image. And I'll show you what that looks like in a moment. So one thing that's pretty important to cover, and this really is where a lot of the complexity comes when you look at configuring the app management service in your on-premises environments, and why you may notice some of the strange URLs when interacting with apps in SharePoint Online too, is how the URL is actually built for an app web. So if you think of provider-hosted apps or Azure Auto-hosted apps, given that the external components are external to SharePoint, it makes sense that the URL changes and that URL is based on whatever the provider has configured or wherever that particular app is hosted. But for SharePoint-hosted apps, if you take the example of a team site or any SharePoint site, the host web as to where you install an app, you might have a scheduling app, as we do in this case. Given that the app web that's created for a SharePoint-hosted app is just a subsite of that host web, you probably expect the URL to look something like this, where we just have /scheduler, as we would if we created a new subsite underneath the particular host web. That's not the case. What we actually have is a URL that looks something like this. So it's pretty ugly, but we have it in that way for a good reason. So what we actually have is a unique, isolated domain name for a particular app web. And every instance of an app web, and remember, these are going to kind of, you're going to have a lot of app webs. You have an app web for every app that's installed every time. That host name is completely unique. And the reason for that is browsers today enforce something called the same origin policy. And that prevents JavaScript that's issued in one domain from being executed in another domain. And SharePoint takes advantage of that browser capability from a security standpoint so that wherever an app is installed, the particular JavaScript that you have within that can't execute in any other domain. So in any other domain other than itself. And that means that an app that may be written and provided to you can't even execute JavaScript from a domain that where the user sits and sees its host web. So we have this layer of isolation, and it's one of the security design goals that were in place for when SharePoint apps were being built. If we take a look at this a little more closely and how this is broken down, it kind of starts to make a bit more sense. So the first part of that URL structure is what we call the app prefix. In an on-premises environment, you can call that whatever you want. It doesn't have to be app. It could be my apps. It could be whatever you want it to be. It doesn't matter. In SharePoint Online, that will be the name of your tenant. So if you have a tenant name of Contoso, you will see Contoso at that point. We then have the app ID. And this is a hexadecimal number that's randomly generated every time you provision the app. We'll talk more about how that is generated shortly, but you have no control over this. This is just created for you, and it will always kind of look like that in the hexadecimal format. Finally, have the app domain. And the app domain in an on-premises farm is something that, again, you specify. You need to obviously make sure the infrastructure is in place to support that, and we'll talk through that shortly. In a SharePoint Online farm, this, again, is taken care for you. And SharePoint Online actually do something quite interesting here, whereby the domain is actually the same as the domain as to where your apps run. That's another story which we'll talk about shortly too. But for an on-premises farm, you would have to configure a different app domain, which different to the domain as to where your actual SharePoint web applications are created. You then have the host web relative URL and the name of the app, which kind of forms the overall URL for your app web. So let's take a quick look at that over on the demo machine. So what I have here is a SharePoint Online site hosted in my development tenant. If you take a look at the URL there, hopefully you can see that. It's just HTTPS, Brightstar Development. So Brightstar Development is my tenant name, .sharepoint.com, standard stuff. If we go to site contents and look at some of the apps that I have available. So here I have the Poll app that I previously mentioned. You can see the URL pretty much straight away, and the app's loaded there with a full immersive experience. So just as we looked at, we have the tenant name, the app ID, and then the app domain. And then you have the name of the app and so on. So that's kind of how it works, and users will always see URLs that look different based on the app ID within the URL string there. The other thing that I want to show you is a different kind of app. So just go back there. I mentioned apps that can be hosted in the cloud. And what I can show you is an Azure auto-hosted app. And this particular app, it doesn't have an app web associated with it. It's hosted in Azure. So there's nothing really for me to access through site contents. But what the app actually does is it allows you to convert images to grayscale, so the example that we saw on the slide earlier. So I have an image library here with an image within it. If I click on that, we've got that old chestnut, the convert to grayscale item within the ribbon. Again, if you notice the URL, we're still obviously within our team site, within my tenant. If I hit convert to Grayscale, what should happen is we're now redirected to the Azure website that supports this app. And if you take a look at the URL now, you can see that Azure Auto-hosted apps, actually, they use their own URL structure for the website that's providing the functionality for this app. Different provider-hosted apps that you may use can also use their own structure. It's only the SharePoint-hosted apps whereby you need to think about that app URL that we looked at on the previous slides. So you can see o365apps.net, that's the app domain that Azure auto-hosted apps use in SharePoint Online. So this example, obviously, is SharePoint Online. We're going to switch over to our on-premises environment shortly, and I'll show you what that looks like more specifically in an on-premises environment. But one thing to call out here also is that this is an Azure auto-hosted apps, and you're probably thinking, well, it looks kind of like SharePoint, but not really. The reason it looks kind of like SharePoint is because you can actually inherit some of the Chrome and theming capability from your host web. My branding skills aren't great, as you can see here. I'm an IT pro. But we have kind of made this look like, to the user, that they're still within SharePoint. And you can imagine that someone who knows what they're doing when it comes to development and branding could do a much better job here to provide a kind of smoother transition into the context of the app than we have done here. And the other thing to call out is that the way that this grayscale conversion has happened for the image, that image conversion has happened using .NET code, so C# code, hosted in Azure website. So this kind of capability that this app provides wouldn't have been actually really possible to implement within a SharePoint-hosted app because it's using server-side code to actually do the image conversion. Okay, we'll come out of this. And we'll flick back to the slides for a moment. Okay, so let's take a look at some of the configuration that we need to think about when we actually want to build out our on-premises farm to support apps. So there's some kind of pre-work that you need to do before you actually get stuck into SharePoint and start configuring your app management service application and so on. And the first thing that you need to decide on is the app domain name that you're going to use. So in an on-premises environment, it's not recommended to use the same domain name that you use for your content. It's not actually possible. So you really have two choices here. You can create a complete, unique, separate domain within your infrastructure. And from a security standpoint, that is Microsoft's recommended approach because you lessen the likelihood of certain cross-site scripting exploits. But the other option, which is probably a bit more straightforward and probably a little bit easier to get your infrastructure guys on board with, is to create a subdomain. However, you kind of need to weigh up the risks associated with either approach and determine what suits your organization best there. As I say, SharePoint Online, they don't even use a subdomain or separate domain. They use the same content domain name for this. But that's Office 365. They've got a whole battery of other protective measures in place, which means that they're comfortable with the approach they've taken. You may be in a similar position yourselves if you kind of and your organizations have similar measures in place, but it comes down to risk management, as we say. So once you've actually determined what that app domain is, and you've configured the domain, you've put it in place within your infrastructure, you need to think about how the actual domain names are resolved to your SharePoint servers. So remember, every single app web has a unique host name. We've got an example here for one app web. You could potentially have 100, 200 app instances within your environment, which would require the same number of domain names created, or host names, rather, for a particular domain. So if you're installing a large number of apps, I doubt that your guys in DNS are going to be happy with you knocking on their door every other minute, asking them to create DNS records for you. So usually, the recommended approach would be to have a wildcard DNS record created that points to your SharePoint servers so that app web requests can be served from your SharePoint servers. Again, it's going to be one of those conversations that you need to have with your infrastructure guys. In SharePoint 2013, you should really be using SSL for everything, pretty much. There's a whole myriad of different reasons why, but with apps, it is absolutely crucial. So app authentication authorization relies on OAuth. And in OAuth, which is a default industry recognized standard, all the access tokens that are used for security are actually transmitted in plain text. So when you're working with apps, you need to make sure that your SharePoint web applications are definitely secured with SSL, but you should be doing that anyway. And again, because we don't know exactly what the host name is going to be in advance, and we're going to have a whole different array of host names, we would require a wildcard SSL certificate to be used so that all of our different host names for all of our unique app web URLs can be certified correctly. So once you've got your infrastructure in place, you've determined what domain name you're going to use, you've built it out, you've created DNS records and certificates accordingly, you can move on to the SharePoint farm configuration piece. There's a couple of service applications that are absolutely required. Firstly, the app management service application. It's fairly straightforward to build out and configure. Obviously, you need to start the corresponding app management service instance on servers in the farm that you want to run that service once you've built the service application out. This service application really is just responsible for managing apps. So it's a requirement. It handles licensing information. It handles routing requests for particular apps. And it's pretty easy to get up and running. The other service application which is required is a subscription setting service application. How many of you use this service application today in your on-premises farms? Any of you? Okay, a few of you. So it's very rarely used in an on-premises farm. It's really there for multi-tenant scenarios. So even if you're not in a multi-tenant scenario in your on-premises environment, you still need to build this service application to support apps. And that's the case for many different, quite a few different scenarios in SharePoint on-premises. And the reason for that is a lot of capability has been designed with Office 365 in mind, apps being one of them. So the actual apps infrastructure relies on this service application being in place. The reason for that is that app ID that we saw in the URL earlier, which is randomly generated, that generation of that string comes from the subscription setting service application. So that's all it's there for. They could have obviously generated an ID randomly in another way, which wouldn't have meant that you needed this service application, but unfortunately that's not the case. So that's the service applications. There's then some other configuration that you need to think about from a SharePoint perspective. Those different components within the app URL that we looked at, so the app prefix, the app domain, you need to tell SharePoint what you're using for those. Obviously, for the app domain, you'll need to have the infrastructure in place beforehand. You need to create an app catalog. So the app catalog will allow you to actually store apps and provide apps to your organization. Each web application within your SharePoint farm will have its own app catalog. You can't actually, out of the box, have an app catalog that spans all web applications in your farm. That's something that may change in the future, but we'll have to wait to see there. You can configure the store settings for your environment. So are you going to allow users to access and buy apps from the store directly, or do you want to manage that yourself centrally? And finally, you can create or specify additional app domains if you are in an extranet type scenario where you have multiple zones. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. We'll talk about it right now, actually. So up until March 2013, when we released the public update for SharePoint 2013, introduced new capability. And before this point, it wasn't actually possible to serve apps outside of the default zone. So if you were in that extranet type scenario, you wouldn't be able to use AAMs and extend your web applications externally and provide access to sites that had apps and use those apps successfully. Now, with the March public update that was released, well, almost a year ago now, this capability was introduced where you could create additional app domains for your farm and also specify specific app domains to use for particular zones of a web application. So you can enable this feature once you've installed the March public update using PowerShell. Got the commands that you need to run there. And then once you've actually enabled that feature, you can specify app domains for different zones of web applications using the commandlet that we've introduced, so the new SP web application app domain commandlet. None of this can be achieved using central admin. It's all PowerShell based right here. So some additional considerations. How many of you are using Kerberos for authentication in your on-premise farms? Cool, so a fair few of you. Apps don't support Kerberos. So the behavior here is if you are running web applications with Kerberos authentication, apps will fall back to NTLM for authentication purposes. And the reason for this is, obviously, each app runs in its own isolated domain. So for Kerberos to work here, we would actually need to set SPNs for every single hostname of every app for Kerberos authentication to work there, which clearly isn't feasible or manageable. SAML authentication. Apps have special requirements on the identity provider for SAML authentication. So for those of you that are using SAML-based claims in your environment, apps require that your identity provider supports wildcard return URL registration, which not many identity providers do, or some do, but ADFS2 doesn't support this today. Final consideration for now is that you may need to consider putting a routing web application in place. So what do I mean by this? Well, imagine the scenario, quite a common scenario, where you have multiple web applications in your farm. So you may have a web application with a host header, intranet.contoso.com. You may have another web application for your My Sites, my.contoso.com. Remember, our app webs have URLs similar to this. So if you kind of walk through the scenario of how that app request is handled, when the app request reaches our web servers, our SharePoint servers, how does it know which web application is actually going to serve that request? So, you know, the first thing that we're going to do is hit DNS, try and work out using the app domain there where we're going to go to serve this request. DNS will send us back an IP address that we can hit. So that will typically be the IP address of our network load balancing array. From there, we'll be routed to one of our SharePoint servers. As I say, on our SharePoint servers, we have, say, two web applications, so two IIS websites effectively listening for the host headers of intranet and my. But the request for our app web doesn't match either of those. So how's that served? If you're in this particular scenario, you'll need to create what we call a routing web application, which is effectively a web application created through SharePoint with no host header configured. Having no host header configured and created on a default port will allow you to deal with those app web requests that come in. So now our requests will come through, the catch-all web application will effectively pick that up, and the SharePoint module, so it's important this is a SharePoint web application you create, not just a standard IIS website, the SharePoint module there will see that request, identify and understand the structure of it, and speak to the app management service application to route us to the correct web application as to where that app web actually lives. In this case, our intranet web application. Question? Yeah. If you're using hostname site collections, this isn't applicable. So this is only if you are using path-based site collections with web applications that have been created with host headers in this scenario. So if you have a single web application that doesn't have a host header and you're using hostname site collections within that web application, you don't need to worry about this because you effectively already have that site without host headers. I'll take further questions at the end if that's okay. Please remember your question and we'll deal with those at the end. Just want to make sure I get through all the content and demo. So what we'll do is just switch over to the demo environment and see what this looks like in practice. Okay, so coming out of SharePoint Online, and I'm going to dive into my SharePoint on-premises environment. Well, in fact, this is a SharePoint farm hosted on Azure IaaS, so virtual machines and IaaS. Simple environment here, but hopefully it illustrates how you actually do this configuration. What I have is a single server, which is acting as my DC, my domain controller, my SQL server, and it's also running SharePoint. Obviously, this is purely for demo purposes and not best practice. So what we're going to do first of all is go over to our DNS management and create the app domain that we want to use to run our app webs within our on-premises environment. It doesn't really matter too much the order that you do these things in, but for me, it makes sense to kind of get this foundation in first. So if we have a look in my environment, you can see that my primary domain is hassanionprem.com. So I'm going to create a separate domain for my apps. And I'm not going to kind of talk through DNS configuration specifically. There's nothing really unique about this. It's just a standard domain. And I'm going to call this hassaniapps.com. Just going with kind of all the default options there for quickness. The next thing we need to do is obviously create that wildcard DNS record so all of our app web requests can be served out of this domain. So I'm going to create that as a CNAME and point it to my SharePoint server. I don't think that went through. That's the guy there on that IP address, 10.0.0.4. That's effectively this server. So hopefully you can see what I'm doing there. You can now see that we've created that CNAME record. It's a wildcard entry, and it's pointing to Hassani on-prem DC, which is the server name that's hosting SharePoint. So now if you think, well, what we can do to prove that that actually works is if I attempt to just ping a host name, which could look something like an app web URL. So I'm just going to make up a random string. The important thing is to make sure that the domain name is hassaniapps.com. Remember, I've just put a random string there because that's effectively what our app web URL host name looks like. That should come back with a response from 10.0.0.4. So that's all good. That's groovy. That's working okay. Obviously, you'd need to then make sure that you've kind of got your certificates available. I'm not going to configure my environment now using certificates for the sake of keeping this demo fairly straightforward, but that is an absolute kind of requirement when you do build out your SharePoint environment for apps for real. So what I am going to do is jump into SharePoint. Here's Central Admin. If I go into the Service Applications area, you can see that I've not actually created my app management service application or my subscription setting service application. If we also take a look at system settings, manage services on server, you can see you have an app management service, which is stopped, and you also have a subscription setting service application, which backs that subscription setting service application we talked about. And it's got a nice kind of unique name of Microsoft SharePoint Foundation Subscription Setting Service. So we'll come out of this and speed things up a bit. We're going to use some PowerShell commands to actually build out those service applications and start the service instances. The first thing I need to do is to save an application pool that I can use to host these service applications to a variable, and then I'll reference that in the commands further down the line. So all I'm going to do there is run this line, and hopefully that's just saved my default application pool for services to that variable. When you start service instances in SharePoint, you need to use the GUID associated with that service instance, so you can kind of get that beforehand. It'll always stay the same. And run that and start the service. So this service instance relates to my subscription setting service application, and as I've run that there, you can see, well, just about the first part of the name, Microsoft SharePoint Foundation Subscription Setting Service Application. I'll now go ahead and create the Subscription Setting Service Application. And you really need to run that line. You can see that I've given it a name of subscription setting, service application. I've also given it a database name, setting service DB. You can call it what you want there. That should just take a couple of moments to run through. And obviously, once that does complete, we'll need to create the proxy associated with that service application so that the service application is usable. And the proxy, interestingly, this particular commandlet doesn't allow you to specify a name, which is quite unique when creating service application proxies in SharePoint. I don't know why that is. Obviously, that team didn't get the memo. If we run that through, that should now be created. So we've gone through the service subscription setting service application creation. Now deal with the app management service application. Start the service there first. You can see the names come through there. App management service. That should be provisioned in a moment. Now go ahead and create the app management service application. That went through pretty quickly. And then finally, create the proxy for the app management service application. And here, this time, we have been able to specify the name for that proxy. So if we switch back over to Central Admin, if we first refresh the services on server page, you can see now that the app management service is started. You can't really see it. I'm going to zoom in. And then also, the Microsoft SharePoint Foundation subscription setting service is started too. If we move over to application management, service applications, you can see now that we've got an app management service application just here. And then our subscription setting service application is here too. So service applications are taken care of. We now move into the apps area of Central Admin and configure a few pieces here. The first thing that I like to do is to configure the app URLs. And what this means is configuring the different pieces of the app URL structure that we've been looking at. So the app domain name needs to be specified. This always saves the previous name that you've used. So I've obviously run through this demo a few times. And once you delete the service application, you can't actually access this page. So you must create the service applications first before you attempt to come in here. So hassaniapps.com, that matches the domain with the wildcard entry that we've obviously just created in DNS. You can then put the app prefix in. So I'm just going to use app, nice and boring. Hit OK. So that's that side of things. The other things to show you here are the app catalog. So in the essence of saving time, I've actually gone ahead and pre-created my app catalog. You can see the web application, which we're going to use in today's demo, spc.hassanionprem.com, has an app catalog created at site/appcat. Whoops, daisy. And I can open that. And that should just load in a moment. And this is our app catalog. As I say, the app catalog is unique to every web application. Within the app catalog, you can upload SharePoint apps, Office apps. So obviously, all of this infrastructure that we're putting in place does support Office apps as well as SharePoint apps. You can come into the list for SharePoint apps, click on New App, attempt to add an app. I've just got a really basic app here that we're going to use for the purpose of this demo. It doesn't do anything exciting. It's just simply an app that contains a list. But hopefully, it will show us how the app's infrastructure actually works. So I've added that app to the app catalog. I'll go back to Central Admin and see if there's anything else that's worth showing you here. The store settings that we mentioned earlier, this is where you can specify as to whether or not users have the ability to purchase apps directly from the store themselves. If you select no here, users obviously still will be able to access the store, but rather than being able to purchase the app, they'll only be able to submit a request for you to purchase the app. And that request will then appear within your SharePoint app catalog. So you may have noticed on the homepage of the app catalog, we kind of had three key areas linked to lists. As well as the SharePoint and Office apps list, we've got this requests list. where the requests that users submit will appear here. So you could set up alerts or whatever else on this list to manage it. Okay, I think we're good to go from here. So now what we'll do is move over to our end users screen. So logged on through a different server, logged on with a test user account, and we've got a standard SharePoint team site here called SPC Demo. You take a look at the name or the web application URL. We've got spc.hassanionprem.com. So this is a web application that we're going to attempt to install an app to. Before I do that, what I wanted to show you quickly back on our SharePoint server is the fact that I've got a whole kind of host of different web applications here. If we look in IIS, you can see I've got this routing web application. I've also got the SPC web application down here, second from the bottom. But the routing web application, you can see, has no host header there. So I clicked on bindings, it's just running with port 80 in there. So that's going to act as a routing web application. Is it okay if we just tell the question, or is... The default website is disabled. It's not here yet. So if we flip back, that routing web application is actually a SharePoint web application, as I say, and it must be that. If we go back to Central Admin, I can show you the application management list here to prove that it is exactly that. You can see that we've got this routing web application on Hassani on-prem DC is the URL because there's no host header. That's our server name. So if we flip back to our end user screen, let's test. If we head over to site contents and we click on add an app, and then we click on from your organization to further filter down, this from your organization view will show all apps from your app catalog that you've uploaded. I'm then prompted to trust the app, and then it should install pretty quickly. Once the timer job fires to install that. It's a fairly small app. There's nothing to it. It's just provisioning a single list. However, you do have to wait for the timer job to run to actually go ahead and install that. The installation timer job runs every minute, so it should happen pretty quickly. Yeah, one quick question? Sure. Yeah, so this particular user test has access to the app catalog. You configure permissions on a case-by-case basis for that app catalog. Obviously, you can use groups and so on to make that easier. Yes, absolutely, yeah. So now I've just installed the app, I've clicked on the app, and you can see that the app is successfully loaded. I did say that it wasn't anything too exciting. All it is a single list. It gives me a welcome message. But the interesting piece, really, is the URL. So we've got the prefix that I specified. We've got the app ID. And then you've got the app domain name, hassaniapps.com. Then got the app name and so on. The other important thing, which I didn't mention earlier, was if we are using SSL for our web applications, the web applications that are running our SharePoint content sites, obviously you will bind the certificates to those individual web application sites in IIS. But what about the certificate for your apps? So the app domain is obviously different to the domain that you're using. So you would need a separate wildcard SSL certificate because wildcard certificates can't support multiple domains. So the other purpose of the routing web application in this particular scenario is that it actually allows you to bind the certificate for the app's domain to itself. Otherwise, where would you bind that? Obviously, there's an exception when if you're using Windows Server 2012, we can actually bind multiple certificates based on a particular host name using new capabilities there. But if you're not running 2012 version OS, that's the approach you could take for that. The other caveat of the routing web application to be aware of is it must have access to the other web applications in your farm. So there's a couple of ways you can give it that access. Either you use the same identity for all web applications, or you place all of the web applications within the same application pool. Two options for that. It's in the notes of my slide, that information. So if you download the slides, you should be able to retrieve those notes in there. Okay, let's flip back over to the slide deck. So just to switch gears a little bit, I want to talk through kind of the typical life cycle of an app, through installing an app, upgrading an app, a bit around license management, and finally some information around monitoring apps, and really just kind of make you aware of some of the timer jobs that are part of this under the hood, and also some of the PowerShell commandlets that are worth knowing, because a lot of this information isn't documented too well today on TechNet, unfortunately. So kind of to make sure that we kind of cover all bases, I did just mention this. When you come to installing apps, it typically happens pretty quickly because you have this timer job that runs every minute. So as soon as you hit install an app, a timer job will run, look at all apps that are waiting to be installed, and actually install that particular app, provision the app web, and so on. However, you do have a different option around deployment of apps. You don't have to upload apps that you build to the app catalog. Apps are built as an app package, and you can actually import that app package directly to a specific site using the PowerShell commandlet that we have on the screen here, import SP app package. And once you've imported that package, you can then use the corresponding install SP app to install that particular app. Obviously, you can use that PowerShell commandlet to install apps that are located in the app catalog too. Then obviously have the uninstall SP app instance, which again, as part of the app lifecycle story, will remove all components of the app, including the UI components that are added to the host web. As well as installing apps in that manner, we have something that I've not really mentioned until now. And these are what we call tenant-scoped apps. And these are kind of a bit of an exception in terms of everything that we've talked about up until now around the one-to-one mapping that we have between our app web and host web. So in some scenarios, it may make sense for you to provide access to an app from multiple different sites within your environment, but all of those sites speaking to the same instance of the app, i.e. the same app web. It won't make sense for all scenarios, but it will be for some. And these types of apps have a special name. They're called tenant-scoped apps. But there are a couple of limitations to be aware of. And there's no kind of, as far as I'm aware, and I've tried looking into this, real kind of good reasons for these limitations. It's purely just the way that they have been implemented, and I would expect this to change soon. But today, tenant-scoped apps can't contain custom actions for the ribbon. So if you remember the convert to grayscale button that we placed in the ribbon for the auto-hosted app, and they can't contain app parts. So really, the idea and thinking behind these sorts of apps is when you want that full immersive experience and you want to have multiple instances pointing to the same set of data and logic. So let's quickly show you what that looks like from a deployment and management perspective. What I'm going to do is flip over to my demo environment and jump back to my SharePoint online site. What I can show you is the app catalog in my SharePoint online site, and I'm only showing this in SharePoint online because it's kind of set up here. It's exactly the same behavior in SharePoint on premises. Rather than being, although it's still called a tenant-scoped app, it's actually scoped to your farm in SharePoint on-premises. But the idea is the same. So the way you deploy tenant-scoped apps is actually by having the app first in the app catalog, so it is installable. But then you do something which is a bit strange, and you don't really kind of see the point of, if you think about what the purpose of the app catalog is, but you install the app in the app catalog. So rather than installing it in a site somewhere else, you install it in the app catalog. If we go to site contents of my app catalog, you can see that I've actually already installed this poll app. It's an app I built for 2012, hence the image, but it describes the purpose of this tenant deployed app perfectly well. If we then click on the ellipses, you see that we have this deployment option. And you only see this deployment option in the app catalog, so you'll never see that if you install the app anywhere else. I've not even had to build that into the app. It knows that because we've installed this app in the app catalog, we want to have this deployment mechanism available. So if I go ahead and click on deployment, what you then can see is you're brought to a screen which allows you to push out access to the particular app from multiple different locations using a few different mechanisms. You can either add site collections to a list. So if you want specific site collections to have access to this incident app, you can do that quite easily just by typing the URL of those sites in. You can then, which is quite a cool thing, actually add a managed path. So you could say, I want this app to be deployed to all sites that sit under slash sites. So if I select slash sites there, it's actually already added. And then alternative, what you can do is use site templates. So if you want, you have a particular team site and you want this app to be deployed to all team sites, you could do that. I hit OK there, and that's going to then say, do you trust this app? So you're then saying, yes, I trust this app, and I want it to be deployed to all those sites. It's obviously already done in this case. So if I flip over to kind of another site, SPC demo, in my tenant here, you can see if we go to site contents, I've got the instance of the app linked to here, and it pretty much appears straight away. If I do click on it and go into it, you can see that the URL of the app, actually the relative URL to the host web, is site slash appcat. So whichever site I access the app from is pointing me back to the app web associated with the app catalog. One other thing to mention on that actually is that even when you create new sites, the same behavior occurs. So now that I've got this app deployed to sites, any new site that I create underneath that managed path will have that app placed within site contents or a link to the app to refer back to the app web and the app catalog. Okay, we flip back over here. Just a couple of pieces around licensing of apps. So apps in the store can have licensing capability built in. Apps can either be free, paid for, you can have trial-based options, and you can base licensing based on like an entire organization or a specific number of users, and you can then buy licenses accordingly. In a SharePoint on-premises farm, there's a few things to be aware of, and we have a timer job called license renewal. So every time that you actually access an app, the app itself will speak to the app management service application to make sure that the user attempting to access the app has a valid license. And that licensing information is stored in the app management service application, and it's updated periodically using this timer job, whereby the app will speak to the app provider, wherever that may be, and update licensing information. The other thing to be aware of is that licensing information is farm specific. So the first time you install an app from the store that includes licensing information, your farm is actually configured with a deployment ID. So that deployment ID makes sure that you don't just take that app and place it in another environment and allow your environments to another environment that you own to use that. However, if you think about certain scenarios like disaster recovery, whereby you've got a hot standby farm on point, which you want to make sure that if you ever do have to fail over to that DR environment, that you have access to all of the apps that you've actually paid for and you're licensed to use. So for the sake of, or for the purpose of DR, it is possible for you to re-specify that deployment ID. And you can access that deployment ID through the proxy of your app management service application, obtain that, and you can then set that deployment ID within your DR farm. Just a couple of pieces to be aware of when it comes to backup and restore of your SharePoint sites. If you do full fidelity backups of your SharePoint sites, either using SQL Server backups or another third-party tool, or more specifically, using your SharePoint site backup capabilities through PowerShell or otherwise, backup SP site, restore SP site, that will back up the app as part of that site backup. However, if you go for the site export options, the assets within an app web won't be backed up. And you can't actually back up an app web itself directly. But if you attempt to export the host web, nothing related to the app will be included as part of that. And actually, if you check the logs for the export, you'll actually see that the app assets are skipped over, and that information is all logged. If you have an app within a particular site and it's not available in the app catalog anymore for some reason, but it is available within the site itself, and that may be because you've actually installed the app using the import SP app package, and you need to get access to that app, you can use the export SP app package to actually retrieve the app in that way. The final piece around this is when it comes to upgrading apps. Just a couple of things and gotchas to be aware of, really. When you have an app in your environment, developers periodically, or be it in-house developed apps or apps that you've acquired through the store, will release updates for your apps. And you, as a site administrator, would be responsible for upgrading the instance of an app that's installed within your site. Obviously, this could be handled through PowerShell at the farm level, but typically, site owners can manage this and choose when they upgrade apps on a schedule that suits them, so they can determine when they want to have the downtime within their environment to perform the update to take advantage of new functionality. Site owners are made aware that an update is available for a particular app based on a notification state. So how many of you have seen that upgrade is available for app when you have an app environment, right? So you can then click on the app and upgrade the app itself. Sometimes you might notice that there's a delay in that notification state and being updated. So what I mean by that is the way that that notification state is updated is based on a timer job that runs and other properties that are set within your farm. So there's an update interval property, which by default out of the box is set to SharePoint 24 hours. So although you have this app state update timer job that runs every few minutes, that job only will actually run and update that notification state if the update interval is set to 24 hours and hasn't actually been synced for less than 24 hours. So you could potentially be waiting for over 24 hours from when the app was actually updated, or an update was provided for the app, rather, into the app catalog, and being able to see that notification. If you can't see that notification as a site owner, there's no other way of actually updating the app. There's some commandlets there that actually allow you to see that update interval, which by default is 24, so there's no, again, good reason for why it is 24 hours. It's something that you may as well bring down if you want to provide the ability for your site owners to upgrade apps themselves. You can see the last runtime, so you can see if it did occur more than 24 hours ago, or less than 24 hours ago, rather. And then you can set the interval itself. Okay, a final few pieces around monitoring. When you monitor apps out of the box in SharePoint, you have a few capabilities. You may have seen the link that I kind of glanced over in Central Admin through the demo. In an on-premises farm, all the monitoring information available to you about apps regarding app usage, so where the app's installed, where has an app been uninstalled from, and then any kind of runtime errors you can see. You have that available to you in Central Admin, but it's site collection scoped, so you have no kind of farm view of all that information. Obviously, you could aggregate that data through customizations and so on. However, in SharePoint Online, you have that information available to you at the tenant scope. So for a particular app, you can see all site collections as to where an app is installed and all runtime events associated with that particular app. You have the same sort of information available to you at the site collection level too. And then finally, just some login categories there for reference, really. So if you're running an on-premises farm and you're attempting to troubleshoot apps, you may want to kind of turn on verbose for those particular categories when you're mining your ULS logs. So just to very quickly show you what this looks like in SharePoint Online. And again, you have the same sort of information available to you in an on-premises environment, but I've got a bit more information here. So in my SharePoint Online Administration Center, I have an area called Apps, which allows me to manage apps for my online tenant, rather. We then have monitor apps. And you can see that within the ribbon here, you have the ability to add an app. So an app isn't monitored by default. You actually have to add the app to be monitored. And this is the same case for an on-premises environment too. And you can see that I've already added the poll app here. The other thing to point out is that it gives you the number of install locations, the runtime errors. If I click on runtime errors, it says here that it's going to tell me or give me this information for the last 4 days. I can actually see what those errors are. And you can see that I've got some information here around an error of received and failed item does not exist. So what happened here was I think I deleted the app management service application and still had an app installed on my SharePoint site and attempted to access that app, and obviously it wasn't available to be accessed and so on. One final thing to mention on that is that that information isn't always hugely up to date. So it's information that's pulled from your usage analytics as part of search now in SharePoint 2013. And it does still rely on timer jobs to run and pull through information from your usage logs that are generated by IIS. And typically that process happens every 24 hours. So there will be a delay in what you see through that. Okay. So that brings us to the end of the presentation. So we do have some time for questions. Hopefully that's kind of covered off some of the ideas around the configuration for SharePoint 2013 apps and some of the operations that will help you manage that. I'll stay around for questions, so feel free to either go to a mic or jump up. Thank you. Hi. Do you want to go to the mic? Or? Sorry, thanks.
I had the same. Hello?
Yeah, I think the mic's on.
Okay. It's on?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I had a question on the permissions. For the app catalog permission for a user to install apps from the catalog,
yeah.
Do they just need the read-only permission?
You need to give them permissions, yeah.
No, just the read-only permission? Or
there is a specific setting. I'll have a look. If you come up in a moment, I can show you that.
Okay. And I had the same, I got everything set up on a multi-tenant on-premise farm.
Yeah.
Everything was working fine except for login prompts for devices, for phone and tablet. So if I have an app on a site, if I have three apps, it would prompt me thrice to log in for an on-premise setup.
Yeah, so you'd have to, so the way to get around that in an on-premise environment, obviously from your desktop machines, is by adding the app domain to your local intranet zone in IE.
It works on the desktop.
Yeah.
But what about tablets and phones?
So it's going to be phone and device specific. You're authenticating to a separate domain, effectively. The experience isn't going to be great unless your specific device allows you to kind of save credentials in some way for that.
Is it possible to build these apps in a way that it can also work anonymously and for logged in people it gives different information?
That's an interesting one. Through provider-hosted app, that capability would definitely be supported. You could effectively do what you want with a provider-hosted app.
Not with the SharePoint app.
For a SharePoint app, you need to have a profile. You need to have an identity. That's part of the requirement.
Even for anonymous?
I believe so, yeah. I don't think SharePoint apps support anonymous. Well, they don't.
Thank you so much.
No worries.
Hello. Can we host a single app catalog for different web applications?
No, each web application will have its unique app catalog.
Can the app catalog be a hostname site collections, or it has to be a managed pad?
Say that again, sorry?
Can the app catalog can it be a hostname site collection, or it has to be a managed pad based?
The app catalog, it can be a hostname site collection.
Could
yeah.
Be. Okay.
Absolutely.
Other question.
So that's one of the reasons why you might actually want to consider using hostname site collections rather than path-based site collections with multiple web applications, because then you have a single web application in your farm. You can, you know, and that's an approach which is actually quite encouraged a lot more than before now in SharePoint 2013, is to have a single web application and use hostname site collections. That's effectively how SharePoint Online works today.
Makes sense. So earlier you said the apps don't support Kerberos. So if I set the web application to Kerberos, will it, when it comes to app rendering, will it fall back to NTLM?
Yeah. Yeah, so you can still configure web applications to use Kerberos.
I wasn't able to like make it work because when I set the Kerberos, it wasn't falling back to 20 elements, constantly pinging twice or four times.
It should work. It might be a specific the setting that you had on the website under authentication IIS to make sure that you weren't forcing Kerberos through. You need to have the ability to fall back specified, which through SharePoint is a default option, but that might have been changed within IIS for your environment.
Perhaps. So the content, we can still use Kerberos and the maps,
yeah,
we can still use it.
Yeah, that's a supported scenario.
Okay. And last question.
Yep.
Can we redirect the request for app web to a different box, like an app box?
Could you, sorry?
Can we redirect the the app domain request to a different box other than the web front end?
Why would you want to do that?
Well, just in case. You know, if we want to load balance the load.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the load balance device. It could be any of the SharePoint servers. It needs to be a SharePoint server that can serve the content from the app web. So
we can separate the request for app web and the host web.
Oh, I see what you mean. You could do, but that's not really kind of how SharePoint is designed to work. Like, typically, all of your web applications would be served from all
IIS, like in a SharePoint boxes. Can we separate them?
You could stop a web application and then point the app domain's request to go to one specific server, but I really don't think there'd be any benefit in doing that. I can't think why you'd want to do that.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Yeah, it's
all
just. Yep. Yeah, no worries. That's fine. Cheers.
So my question is, do you now see...
Sorry, could you just get a bit closer to the mic?
With the app model, do you see any compelling reason to limit apps to one single web location like it's best practice for 2010? Do you see any compelling reason to limit custom apps to only one web application like it was in 2010?
What do you mean exactly?
So in 2010, it was best practice to separate your custom solution deployments to another web location.
Okay, yeah, so the reason that recommendation that you're talking about around having just custom code running in a specific web application was because full trust solutions obviously have the ability to, you know, potentially impact in a negative way your entire service, all of your content, web applications, and so on. So the idea with apps is that they're self-contained, and anything within SharePoint-hosted apps is client-side. And provider-hosted apps, you're running, executing code off-box, off your SharePoint farm. So
I guess my concern is more like our apps tend to be more customized user experience. So in terms of branding or integration with,
I would say there's no technical reason.
Okay, so I guess like say SharePoint 15 comes out, changes all the branding. Is there any assurance that will kind of carry through? All the apps the user experience will still stay the same.
The user experience in terms of the way you access apps, that won't be impacted by an upgrade. Well, I mean, I can't say that on behalf of Microsoft, but it'd be a really bad move if they did it, suddenly change the way that you interacted with apps. So if they, for example, decided to scrap app parts, that's just not something they're going to do. From a branding perspective, that could quite easily change. So Chrome that you put in place within your apps could potentially no longer be in line with the Chrome and branding of a team site in the next version of SharePoint.
All right, thank you.
No worries.
Hello, I have a question. If you were working with Hostname Site Collection, so we have one big web application with no host header, and my question is where the SSL certificate for the wildcard app domain is binded. Is it still recommended to make an additional routing web application, or I can add an additional binding in the still existing kind of routing web application which my all other web application MSI collections sit in?
There's no need for a routing web application anymore. So the best approach really would be to, if you're using Server 2012, you can bind the multiple certificates.
To a single IP, so I don't need a second IP?
A
second IP address. In 2012 with this feature, because normally I can only bind a SSL certificate to one specific IP, so...
Well, yeah, and before 2012, you can't even, you can't do it, it's not even...
In 2012, there is a feature...
2012, there's a feature called SNI.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Subject name indication, I think. Okay. And that allows you to,
so then
to do
I
that.
Don't need to add an additional binding in IES?
Well, that's how you do it. So you bind the certificate.
Okay.
Well, yeah, you have the you have two certificates bound to the same IES website.
All right, okay.
For that web application that contains all the site collections.
You can have in a sound certificate a wild card.
You can create a certificate with two sites.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. And the other question is, our customer has only authenticated with SAML. And so you mentioned in the slide that there is special requirements to work with apps in combination with SAML.
Yeah, so basically there's something called the wildcard return URL registration, which is a configuration within your identity provider. So whatever identity provider is being used.
It's ADFS and behind it Shibboleth.
Okay, so
we use ADFS as a protocol gateway.
I don't know if I know ADFS version 2 doesn't support it.
Doesn't support.
But I don't know about the other provider that you mentioned there.
Okay.
Shibboleth does.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that supports if you're using SAML-based authentication. Okay.
Thanks.
I'm going to have to start packing up, but if you want to come over and then we can speak.